This is Morning Edition on New England Public Media. I'm Carrie Healy. People have been making the case for reparations for Black Americans for decades, and there are signs of forward movement. President Joe Biden has expressed support for a federal bill that would study the issue, and the new COVID-19 relief legislation includes several billion dollars to help Black farmers. In New England, some groups are hoping to build on the momentum with targeted efforts. A warning to listeners, this report begins with some graphic material. New England Public Media's Karen Brown has the story.
Lent Shaw was a successful Black farmer in Colbert, Georgia in 1936, when he was accused of assaulting a white woman and put in jail. A lynch mob later dragged him out of jail, tied him to a tree, and killed him.
In order for a lynching like this to occur, and in order for there to be no steps toward justice, the entire community had to play a part in this.
Evan Lewis is Lent Shaw's great-grandson. He'd known about the lynching his whole life. A few years ago, he decided to visit the town where the killing took place. In recent years, Lewis, who lives in Watertown, Massachusetts, has met other descendants of lynching victims. Together, they decided to seek reparations.
And to try to put families back on the footing that they might have been on if not for these atrocities that forced them off of land, that oftentimes removed sort of primary breadwinners from the home.
Historically, many people have argued that reparations in the form of direct cash payments should go to the millions of descendants of enslaved people who continue to suffer from inequality and racism in America.
So much of what we have accumulated as a country is directly tied to the plunder of Black bodies and to Black and of Black communities, such that if we really want to engage in the effort of tying a dollar amount to what has been stripped from Black people, that number will be massive.
And Lewis says that's why many people argue against reparations. They say it just doesn't seem practical. So he wants to start with what he considers a more tangible goal, the economic consequences of specific acts of violence.
And we can identify the land that my great-grandfather owned. We can also quantify the impact when the entire family, my great-grandfather's wife and his 11 children, are forced to relocate from Georgia, abandon their land, set down roots in a place like Chicago, and go from being landowners to living in public housing.
Lewis is leading a group of about 24 descendants of lynching victims, working with the Center for Civil Rights and Restorative Justice at Northeastern University. Lewis says they're following other smaller-scale actions, like at Georgetown University, which created a fund to give free tuition and other benefits to descendants of enslaved people who the school had once sold.
There is a really long history of organizing for reparations, and people have taken, you know, different approaches.
Dania Francis is an economist at UMass Boston who specializes in reparations. Francis supports a broad federal program of reparations, but says there's no reason not to try a more targeted approach, like focusing on lynching victims.
It helps paint a picture. Who has been harmed and what does it look like? And so in that way, I think that it's important and it's building blocks of a larger movement.
So who would like to put the motion forward?
Another way to start small is by geography.
To adopt the resolution affirming the town of Amherst's commitment to end structural racism and achieve.
In December, the Amherst, Massachusetts Town Council passed a resolution to start on a path of remedy as a first step to reparations. Councillor Dorothy Pam spoke before the vote.
Let's not think about the big whole picture. Let's look about what's in our own backyard and look at our town.
The Amherst effort, modeled on a similar one in Illinois, was launched by two white residents of the town. One of them, Matthew Andrews, says they were inspired by the George Floyd protests last summer.
When we looked at all the Black Lives Matter signs on people's lawns and at the library and around town, and we thought, well, maybe there's enough goodwill and enough willingness to actually do something.
Although Amherst is often considered a tolerant, liberal New England town, Andrews says its racial history is much darker. They found records of slavery, of banishing freed slaves, exclusion from hotels, restaurants, and higher education, and at least one property deed from 1950 that forbids selling to Black people. Even today, census numbers show the median salary of Black residents in Amherst is significantly lower than white residents.
Racism is a system of advantages developed and benefiting white people. And that exists everywhere, even in Amherst.
Kathleen Anderson is among a group of Black stakeholders in Amherst, charged with deciding what reparations would look like there and who would be eligible. Though she says across the country, mostly white officials have final say.
It becomes important for areas that are predominantly white, like Amherst, to advocate for reparations. The expectation is that white people will wake up to the ways that they have benefited from the discrimination against Black people and will demand that justice be served.
Yes.
The resolution passes unanimously, 13 in favor.
For New England Public Media, I'm Karen Brown.